a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. Folks, the Magic Christmas Adopt a Family campaign is ongoing. We've received a nice little boost here in the last hour or so. We got a $1,500 match challenge from Jiffy Mix and Chelsea Howdy Homes. Want to thank you for that. So all the donations that we get up to $1,500 leading up to our deadline tomorrow will be matched by Jiffy Mix. So keep those donations coming in. Give us a call at 734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio at WTK.com. And go online to their website, magicofchristmasfoundation.org. A lot of you want to pick up wish lists, and we still have a number of them left.
Yes, Sam. So I did the count. We have adopted 148 out of the 249, which means there's 101 left. So we still have 101 left. Wish list includes for a 15-year-old boy looking for comic books, some anime, and some boots. We have an 8-year-old boy looking for hat and gloves, a remote control car, and a skateboard. And we have a 13-year-old boy looking for some Michigan slippers, a GameStop gift card, and a mic for a PS4. So a few ideas of what the wish lists are. I'll give you one more. It's for a 9-year-old boy looking for snow boots, sweatpants, jacket, jeans, sweater, and an age-appropriate toy or game. 734-998-1050. Email studio at WTK.com. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Adopt a child. Adopt a family. Adopt a wish list. Make a donation. Lots of different ways you can help.
All right, folks. So, MGO Blog Roundtable time. Fellas, how you doing?
Great.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, all things considered, right?
Yeah. You know?
At least one of us looks awake.
Ed? Which one?
That would be Ed.
Ed.
Oh, me? Oh, interesting. I always get the energy up because I got to get the kids out to school a little bit.
I'm about
early
to say, Ed's the one that's got the kid at home, the kids at home that he has to get ready for school, so the early morning is a guarantee.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, let's introduce the panel as we always do. I call him the venerable one. He's the guy with the books, and people are clamoring for them suddenly. I don't know if you picked up on the recent uptick.
Well, yeah, they're
people wanting their get their hands on them.
And it's because they're free. you know, free stuff is easier to sell. But yeah, that's me.
Well, a lot of free stuff you just throw away, right? Like the, you know, the circulars that come, and you know, the junk mail that comes, you just throw those away. They don't just throw away your books, Craig.
Craig, have you ever thought about teaching a class in marketing?
That could be
a next career.
Yeah, how about another, you just give the titles of your books?
Obscene Diaries of a Michigan Fan, which I'm still have a few to give away, and if people contact me, although I'm run out of mailers right now, so I may be a little sluggish on.
And you will put it on Amazon at some point.
Yeah, it's on. Well, I don't know. You can probably find that on Amazon, and then search for the Unified Field Theory football version is on Amazon. And I don't have any of those lurking around, so I can't give those away.
All right. Across from me, from MGO Blog, Brian Cook. How you doing this morning, Brian?
Good.
All right. And Ed Fang, Power Rank.
What's up?
What's on? What are you doing on the Power Rank right now?
What am I doing? I am predicting playoff probabilities. That's been a big thing this week. And then just getting ready for bowl season, starting to think about next week and previewing games and writing content and maybe even doing some audio on the site. That's kind of a goal.
You know, speaking of bowl games, you know, I keep seeing that the Michigan fan game base seems most interested in playing Florida because they think that's a game we can win.
Yeah, because Florida sucks.
But, right.
Right.
And it seems to me at this point, don't we want to play the best read option team we can play?
No.
Why?
No. Because.
Don't we want the practice?
Well.
No.
No. Unless they come up with a better plan than DJ Durkin did on Saturday, then no, I don't want to play a read option team.
See, I do. I want the, you know, the 2 weeks of practice, you know, playing against that. I want another game against a team that can run that.
There isn't really.
I mean, what's the difference between being 10-3 and 9-4?
Michigan's going to be in Florida playing an SEC team.
Yeah.
There isn't really an SEC team that.
Mississippi
is available that does that. I mean, Mississippi is not a read option team.
Not really.
Yeah. I don't want to see any spray team. But anyway, right. Let's talk about Ohio State. And you mentioned
pass.
Well, you broke it down, right? Did you go
back
and look?
No, I haven't looked at that game yet at all.
You have?
Oh, wow.
Okay. What do you think I was going to do? Like, go back and be like,
That is your job, isn't it?
It is.
Mr. UFR man?
It is, but I, like, after... Like,
no, I understand. You got more time.
You got more time, so... So, I've been...
So, cursory glance. First look.
Sure.
What did you see? What did you think happened in that game?
Terrible, terrible game plan. I mean, we saw the resurrection of the GERG. The Greg Robinson 335.
I mentioned it. I mentioned it before the game.
I know, and I read that post on your site, and I was like, "Oh God, no!" And then we saw James Ross, who's like 30 pounds lighter than poor Kenny Demons was, lining up right next to a nose tackle trying to take on a offensive lineman, and you had a deep middle of the field safety for the whole freaking game, like, ugh. Like in my preview, I was like, okay, what happens if and when Michigan can't win the one-on-one battles up front that they've relied on winning the entire year? Mm-hmm. And what happens then? Like, what is their response? Do they have a response? The answer was the 3-3-5 or no. And DJ did a good job with the defense, but when he got punched in the mouth late in the year, he had no response. So in the Indiana game, they just run down the field. And Durkin just runs his defense. He doesn't have a run blitz. He doesn't bring down a guy into the box. He doesn't run a cover zero.
Well, I mean,
he got punched in the mouth, and then in the Ohio State game, he did the same thing. And what bothers me is that he didn't learn from the Indiana game.
So you would rather have taken him a risk, bring a ninth guy down in the box, take your chances with Barrett or
If Michigan
Sudfeld
gets
throwing.
Beat because they hit four or five of those throws that they hit on Clark – fine. You know, that's a really tough throw and a really great play, and Michigan was set up to deal with these guys one-on-one in coverage, and to just sit back there and passively take it to the tune of 350 rushing yards at 7 yards a pop for Ezekiel Elliott, that's terrible.
Yeah, I did rewatch the first half. I haven't looked at the second.
Hey, that's
half
funny.
Yet.
Me too. I could only stomach the first half, and then I was like,
this was a nice, sensible field position game till late in the first quarter when we make, I think, a terrible choice to come after the punt when they're punting out of their end zone.
I disagree with that.
Well, I'm not sure that's a roughing or not. It's a borderline call
because. Chesson, if you make contact with the kicking leg, it sets a 5-yarder. And if you actually hit the body and the plant leg, which Michigan didn't do, the Ohio State player
yeah,
did.
Yeah, the Ohio State guy ran his own guy
so
over.
So if that's a 5-yard penalty, then it's just, you know, you took your shot and then now you're returning a punt.
Chesson barely touches the punter on his foot.
He got him. But
the punter gets run over by an Ohio State guy.
Yeah.
But even then, I'm thinking, let's keep it a nice, sensible game. There's no point in gambling. But then on the second play thereafter, the long run by Elliott, I'm screaming in the stands. We're for some reason overshifted to the boundary side on that. They put a guy in motion. We don't shift to the motion at all.
I was doing the exact same thing, actually.
And it's like 9-5, 9-6, or 8-5 on the field side for Christ's sakes. And the play, you know, we have no chance of defending.
You know, when the tight end moves and you don't see the defense respond in any way whatsoever,
and we're already overshifted to the boundary.
I thought that was.
Yeah, they did things with formation and motion that clearly, I mean, in
moving a tight end across the formation. Is
they've
not
seen that.
I hear, but it speaks to a broader theme. I think in that game that Michigan defensively didn't respond well to it. Basically all day, as far as I was concerned.
No, I mean, you got to wonder what they were doing. Was the entire defense interviewing with Maryland? That's the only explanation I have.
I mean, it's not like they executed the game plan all that well.
Right,
like on the Ezekiel Elliott run, like I mean, I think Morgan gets crushed by the tight end.
That's because
I mean, Bolden can't even make it remotely to cover up that distance. I mean,
there's no way.
I mean,
on
are we absolving the linebackers for missing the tackles for like not being able to get off a single block?
You know, there's that. Well, getting off a block is something that is, you know, if you have the right angle to get off a block, you can get off a block. But sometimes you don't. The reason that play came up, that Morgan got crushed inside, is not because he's necessarily a bad linebacker post-snap. It's bad he was being a bad linebacker pre-snap.
Right.
But the entire defense was. So, like, you didn't see Bolden move over. You didn't see Morgan.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I remember talking to Ira after that play. And I think that this is the sequence. I have to go back and check my notes where, man, they came to the sideline and DJ was, I mean, he was going nuts. Uh-huh. He was going nuts. And then he was talking to the linebackers at that point in time because, you know, they made that. Now I don't know if they miss making a call or not.
I mean,
I don't know what happened.
So sometimes what Michigan's done on motion this year is they'll send one of their defensive backs back and then move the safety to that side down, and maybe that's what the linebackers thought was going to happen, which did not happen. And someone's got to move. And I don't know. I mean, I agree that Morgan getting caught inside is a real bad thing for that play, but it's more about what he didn't do pre-snap than what he did after the snap.
Yeah, but
how many times in that game did we see a linebacker get a hand on Elliott or whoever was with the ball, and it still didn't work?
Yeah, they didn't play. Linebacker play was not.
But and I don't think it's been good all season.
But a lot of that though, Ed, from my view, was that they had hard angles and that they were tough tackles to make. You had a running back who's great running free in space, and the linebackers missed a lot of tackles. On the other hand, they were hard tackles. They were not; those were
so
structural.
It was really bizarre because inside zone, tight zone is like their bread and butter. And what a lot of Ohio State opponents will do is they will scheme to take that away. And Michigan seemed to do the opposite. So when you have that 3-3-5 out there, you've got one defensive tackle in between the tackles, and they can just run inside zone and get great angles on everybody. And I don't know what the linebacker right over the nose tackle is supposed to do. I'm sure that somewhere in the history of football that has worked.
Yeah, but it's never worked for us.
You know,
I mean, if you have a stud in middle linebacker,
I think what was perplexing to me about it is that's a defense. I mean, you got to have your run fits down in any defense.
And you don't run it. I mean,
you don't run that, and boy, it's really easy to foul up your – anyway.
The last time we saw that was the Penn State game against Matt McGloin. That was like the real end of Rich Rodriguez where it's like, it's over now, boys. So to have that come back, it's like
the other thing that drove me crazy is when they did go with four defensive linemen, at least at times we were playing too high. And so we're playing four defensive linemen and too high. I mean, how is that going to work? I mean,
it's in too high safeties. Yeah. Gentle listeners.
Right. And so what in the world was that all about? I mean, Scott Leffler told me, "Hey, a team comes out and plays too high against us back in the day. We're just gonna run. We're just gonna pound it."
You know, I talked about this earlier in the week because I was getting bombarded with those kind of tweets. Why are they playing too high safeties? Yeah. And you know, I admitted to thinking the same thing, but I said, "Hey, maybe they're just not concerned about getting. Maybe it's not the concern about getting beat deep. Maybe it's the concern that they have about the big run plays."
Well,
getting down to football.
I mean,
field.
there's too high, and then there's like too high, like Michigan State runs at where they have two quote unquote high safeties.
They're not high though.
At about 8 yards.
Mm-hmm. Right, we're talking 12, 15 yards.
Exactly, and the silver lining is that I'm a lot less distressed about losing DJ Durkin after that game.
Wait. I agree with you, Brian, but I just wanted to say this was the Brian Cook that said this was a historically good defense at one point during the season.
God, you're like a Twitter egg all of a sudden.
What's a
Twitter
egg?
I'm just saying.
When you sign up for Twitter and you don't change your avatar, you just have an egg avatar.
I can do that and tweet you that.
And
you want me to put the egg
in your back? People who like talk to you on Twitter who are Twitter eggs, they're usually like racist Nazi idiots.
Wow.
And I'm not saying that Ed is a racist Nazi idiot.
Thank you.
I'm saying he's talking like he is one. So like I got that stuff in my mentions when I was like Durkin, had a bad game plan. But I was reacting to the additional data provided by the Ohio State game as if I'm not supposed to be like, oh, 350 rushing yards. That's fine.
So last night when I refused to watch the second half of the game, I went back and watched the Utah and some of the BYU game, which was interesting on many levels. But, you know, even in the BYU game, it was the same thing. Like, there was one play in the first half where, you know, I mean, I think it was Morgan can't get off a block from the fullback. Bolden can't catch the running back, and he breaks off a 20-yard gain, similar to what we saw in the Ohio State game. So I feel like we've had these problems all year. They were less when Ryan Glasgow was being a beast up the middle.
One play? I mean...
No, one play. But the thing is, when you put a little bit more talent, you put a better offensive line, you put a better running back.
It wasn't one play against Utah, but...
Against BYU, for sure. That was the only one they broke off.
To Brian's point.
They held Booker to like 50 yards.
Okay, it wasn't in the run game. I think he's just talking about linebacker play and not necessarily linebacker play against the read option. Because in that game, they could not take care of Booker in space. It was the short passing game that just...
Yes, it was more the short passing game and a
even
little bit of tempo.
Even that wasn't that effective. The only thing that was really efficient.
I thought he was their leading receiver in that
game.
He
was, but if that's a fact, then you're not doing very well on offense. And the main thing that actually worked for them was the quarterback run game. The only thing they did efficiently was get Travis Wilson about 60 yards. And we saw that in this game as well, where JT Barrett got off and did a lot of good things on the ground. Running the same kind of plays that we've seen at Michigan with Denard Robinson, like they ran the
Vera time. I agree with you. Look, there are some schematic things. I actually agree with both of you, frankly. I think there are some schematic things in this game that were bad, and then I think the linebacker play was just atrocious.
Well, I haven't looked at it closely enough, but in the past, like except the Minnesota game,
that's a bit harsh. It was just bad.
In the Minnesota game, I thought that Desmond Morgan has played well, and part of the reason that he hasn't looked that great is he funnels plays back to Bolden, and Bolden just takes blocks. And Bolden runs upfield of blocks, which drives me crazy. Like the Penn State big run, Bolden decided that he was going to try to go upfield of a guy who released free and ended up just getting completely irrelevant to that play. Yeah. And it's just like, dude, you're a senior. That is some freshman stuff right there.
Yeah. So, to me, and we got to get to a break, the ones that were – just way too troublesome, to just pass off, or the missed tackles, the times where they did have, they were in position to make a play and they just didn't leverage the football correctly. I remember one distinct occasion where, you know, you had a linebacker come, and it was clearly his job to turn the play inside.
Yeah, that was Ross.
I'm not throwing any names.
I'll throw them out there. Cause you know, if they get it tougher from the radio and they get it from Jim Harbaugh, then
but it's not like it was just linebackers. There were times where when DJ did bring a safety up to force
one safety is has got to be your default response, and then you have to think about the second one against the QB.
But then I watched them do that, and then that safety got caught inside. I'm like, how does that happen? Where now he has an alley all the way, you know, right around the edge when, I mean, your sole purpose is to force. Well, it's a safety force.
They're all thinking about transferring to Maryland.
Well, hey, DJ will be back here in 5 years after Maryland is cratered again.
Look, yeah, I still think DJ is – I mean, look, it wasn't a great game. It was a total team loss. I think DJ is going to be a good coach. I really do.
I mean, if you average over the defense over the season, like, he doesn't look as bad as one single game.
I think
I probably could have coordinated that defense.
As we get to a break, what Marcus Ray brought up is, you know, Michigan didn't have the counter. He said the counter you need to have against a team like Ohio State, a read option team, like you can't play straight man-to-man the whole game. So you need that zone counter.
Which even bloggers know. A little fired up today.
I can tell. So, you know, that's maybe the component that in retrospect, you know, it would have been great to have. But moving forward, maybe they will. Hopefully they will. 9:33 on a Thursday. We got to get to a break. Get some of your phone calls, emails, and tweets. On the roundtable coming up here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the official voice of University of Michigan sports. Folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. We have the MGO Blog Roundtable here, and these guys are here to, you know, to talk football. But they, you know, they get it like we do, that, you know, there are some causes that are worth taking the time to push. One of those is the Magic of Christmas Adopt a Family campaign. We have plenty of wish lists left. We need your help. 734-998-1050. Again, 734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@WTK.com. If you want to make a monetary donation to the cause, you can go to magicofchristmasfoundation.org. So as we went to the break, we were looking back at Ohio State. Big picture, though, guys, as we go to the phones. Big picture, this team is better.
Yes. Yes.
This team is better. This team is much better.
Yes. Yes.
And you can look at certain positions where the improvement was dramatic. Quarterback, the improvement was dramatic.
Yep.
Defensive back, the improvement was dramatic. Receiver.
Yep. AJ Williams.
The improvement was AJ Williams. The improvement was
AJ Williams was legit good.
Yep. Yeah.
Like I'm like, okay.
And he actually threw a block, right?
He was a really good blocker this year. Like, he had more catches than Georgia's tight end, Jeb Blazevich. Isaac Nanda, if you're listening. and, like, he really – everything came together for him. And, you know, I had been dogging him for years. And he was a guy who I'm like, oh, God, we got to replace this guy now, which is I think, the biggest turnaround we saw this year. And we saw the defensive linebackers. The defensive line get better. We saw the secondary get better. I mean, really, the only position group that stayed pretty static was linebacker, maybe offensive line.
Offensive line, when it came to run blocking, it just – that didn't improve. They were better as a pass pro.
They were. So. And Devion was a big part of that. So he was great as a pass protector all year.
Could you see Devion becoming a sort of B.J. Askew-esque character?
I've actually said that several times.
I think it would be
– sensible for him.
So here's my pitch: is that we're gonna run Peppers, we're gonna run Kareem Walker. Hopefully, you have a choice. We're gonna run you too, but you have a choice to either be on the field when that happens or not be on the field when that happens.
Right.
Because I mean, he sprung Chesson on that jet sweep against Penn State with a great cut block, and he's been a superior pass protector all year.
I mean, well,
he's a great third down back for.
They have shown.
Tell him he could be Siona Homa next
That's
year.
That's what I was about to say.
And even more.
Maybe and make give him, it to him even more.
And yeah. make him yeah. watch Tuesday night when Rob Lytle's son and everyone else in the Lytle family gets up there to give a speech for him getting inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame because Lytle was a tailback. And then Bo said to Lytle, we need you as a fullback. And what happened?
We'll see. I think it would be, well... You know, I'm not a coach. I have no say. But man, I think that would be.
I think that's
awesome,
and that's better for his
future
as well. Because you know he's got to know by now. It's probably not going to happen as an NFL back. But
how big is he?
It's about 230.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Holmes is 250. I mean, I think Smith can do the job. I'm not saying that's, you know, any reason why he shouldn't be a fullback.
Smith has just as much rage in his heart, though. So
I think he delivers a blow.
Yeah.
That guy moves. He's a striker. Yeah. I don't have any doubt that he would do well, and that his concern would be would he get the ball. But Michigan has shown they will give the ball to the fullback.
Plus, he can be on the field every third down because he can. He looks like he can catch it. He's a terrific blocker.
Before I get any calls on this, I'm not saying that this is their plan. Anyone has talked about this.
This is our plan.
This is only radio talk, radio chatter. So
when he becomes the fullback next year, we can take credit, right?
So no one needs to call me and say, what are you talking about? Yeah. No one is saying that. 734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@WTK.com. Let's talk to Steve in Ann Arbor. Steve, what's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going great.
This is actually Steve Sherrick here, actually.
Oh, hey, Steve. How you doing?
Hey, Ed. Hey, Brian. So, before I say what I'm going to say, I want to preface it by saying that first
keep,
of all,
keep
I think,
a calm.
Yeah, no, well, I'm fine now.
Okay.
A few days. DJ Durkin, I think, is an excellent football coach. Right, but even the great ones have their moments. I mean, Michael Jordan, when he was getting beat down by the bad boys, he realized he had to make a change in his game, and that wasn't jump shot. It was preparing his body so he could take the pounding. Very similar to what I think happened last Saturday. And like you guys were saying, the second caveat I want to say is that I think this season has been a rousing success. Yeah, this past Saturday wasn't great, but other than that, I mean, you can look. I can only think of one player on the entire team who didn't improve. And maybe those units, and you think about those units that were players that didn't improve, and they're older guys. So I think the future is very bright, and I think Harbaugh will do a great job replacing DJ as far as a coordinator. I don't think that's going to be a problem either. What happened Saturday was, I think, we found a hole in the system in this respect. To me, the three pillars of the program are, one, the team. Two, we're going to prepare you for the NFL in everything that we do. And the third one is, I forgot.
But it's going Rick Perry on us.
Yeah. But what happens is, and the third one is, what happens is, I'm sorry, I forgot the third one, but a lot of defensive coordinators will call by tendency and what they see, right? By percentages of what the other team does. The problem is that spread option, they call their offense based on what they see the opponent doing. They're not running inverted veer power read 75% of the time or whatever on this down and distance because that's what they want to do. It's what the defense is showing them will work. So calling by tendency against spread option can be dangerous. And that can work not only with down and distance, but also side of the field, field or boundary, pass, run, whatever. The other thing is that if you're going to run NFL schemes on offense, that's great because the defense is reacting to what you're doing. But you can't just do that defensively because you have to defend what the other team is doing. You're reacting to the other team. And the NFL doesn't run option. If you think about it, the only times that I can remember the NFL running read option were San Francisco with Kaepernick, and look what happened to him when he had to stop running that. And also RG3 with the Redskins, and he got beat up. But when he was running that, they were a good playoff team.
They were.
And so, you know, to play a single high safety can be done, but you have to be really creative like Saban does. But even Saban, what did Ohio State do to him last year?
Yeah, and what did Manziel do to him? And
I mean, and
he's
so,
really struggled.
Yeah, but in the way he runs his coverage, it kind of morphs between cover three and cover one, and those inside guys, not the corners, are off and playing a zone look such that they can be a better factor in the run game. So you can't just play NFL man coverage across the board out there because...
So when you play the man free that Michigan has played all year, those cornerbacks really don't participate in the run game at all.
Run out of the play.
Right. Yeah, and what he's talking about is when Saban runs his pattern matching, those guys are looking in the backfield until they get a read on what coverage they should be running, and sometimes that's come up and stop the run. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, thank you. And what I would have liked to have seen happen after the Indiana game, even though, you know, as Marcus pointed out, it's that, you know, that quarters look that Michigan State ran. And when Michigan State was awesome at it, what did they have? They had locked down guys on the outside, which we have. But I would have liked to have seen us kind of use Penn State as a testing ground and run some of that to say, look, we just got gashed by Indiana. We got this game coming up in 2 weeks. Let's start to sprinkle this in now, get it on film, practice it a little bit. Run it so we can run it more effectively and with more frequency against Ohio State. And I, you know, Brian knows very well, and I put some data up on what happened on Saturday, and they did do that, a handful of snaps. The big issue I have is they've got everybody, you know, a plethora of assistants to get data from the first half. They ran that safety low look a couple of times against the run, stoned Ohio State, got gashed in the regular stuff. Then you come in at halftime, you have that data in front of you, and to not come back with that in the second half as your first plan of attack, I'd love to have an explanation.
I know Harbaugh said we don't discuss scheme and that's cool.
That's a problem.
But, you know, that was the most curious thing to me.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Yeah, that will be a very one-sided conversation if you try to have it with Harbaugh. I'd be remiss if I didn't get you guys your take on the next AD. I mean, do you have any thoughts on?
Before we move on, Steve used to be a defensive coordinator for a high school, so he's seen a lot of read option and he knows what he's talking about. But anyway,
gotcha. Oh, that was it was apparent.
Yeah,
he was very well versed. What do you guys think? I mean, any person, candidate in particular, excite you?
It should be one of the three sitting big time Michigan ADs. The end. Like, I don't care which one, but if it's not Ward or Bates or Long, then something's gone wrong.
Barack Obama, I would wait until Obama's available next year. I'd love to have him as our AD. Like the guy.
You're about to get run off the radio. our Twitter is about to explode.
All right. I don't know. I have no idea.
The
how
upside
do I know
there
about
is
AD?
That whenever anything goes wrong or right, we can say thanks, Obama, and it'll be fine.
That's right.
So that'll be good.
I thought it was a good idea.
But no, it should be one of those three guys, and whoever's making the decision, I'll trust them to pick the guy they think is the best guy there.
It just seems like this is one that they can't really go wrong with.
Oh, and Joe Parker as well. Joe Parker's
in the mix. Yeah, right. And we, you know, I think and Bakes put her name out there, and I think it's he's on point. He's really, I think Diane.
Better not be Julie Herman.
No. Will she ever work again? I don't know.
I doubt it.
Not as an athletic director.
Yeah, it was quite the disaster. Curious what you guys think of some of the basketball action that we've seen. Ooh. over the past few weeks. I mean, I said at the beginning or before the season started, when I looked at this team, I feel like they're going to be able to score. My biggest question about them is, will they play defense and rebounding? Yeah. Will we see it? And
let me jump in and say something I say once every year, so I get to say
God,
it now.
Don't say it.
Oh, I'm going to say it. The secret to basketball is that it isn't about basketball.
And that doesn't make any sense.
It makes complete sense.
You say it every year.
I say it every year, and it never makes sense. But it makes sense to me. And it is and part of
– Explain yourself.
Basketball is so much synergy, how teams fit together, and it's why I rail on about deep rotations and how I hate deep rotations.
Well, it's not a deep rotation anymore.
It isn't, and that's what's happened in the last few games. The other thing, I mean, the rotation's getting shorter, which I like, and in the early games, Karras was kind of a ball stopper, which wasn't, I don't think, good for the team. Now, there's two kinds of ball stoppers. There's Carmelo, who's a team killer, and then there's LeBron, who isn't a team killer, but even with LeBron, it seems to me he tends to hurt his teams because he has the ball too early in the clock.
Okay, so get rid of LeBron.
No, I'm not saying that, but I am saying that what's happened is that Karras is not dominating the ball as early in the clock as he was earlier in the season, and you're seeing the offense in the last 10 seconds. He should have the ball. Because he can create. He's our best creator, and he should have the ball. But early in the clock, I don't want him pounding and dribbling too much. And that's what's happened. And I think Beilein even sort of acknowledged that perhaps was a problem in a kind of backdoor way.
Well, what he's doing is he's doing much more productive things when he's dribbling with the ball. So when he's getting the pick and roll, instead of just kind of, you know, dribbling around and not doing anything, he's getting around the big and then getting to the lane, and then you have an unbalanced defense you can do some things with. So he's much more productive with his movement. But really, you know, Karras is Karras. And, you know, with Walton having an ankle injury and Zach Ervin still clearly struggling with his back injury, this is really a surge that's based on two people, and that's
Mo Wagner
and Duncan Robinson. Mm. Duncan Robinson, who is a absolute assassin from outside the arc, and he's also a guy – who understands his offense. So he knows where to be. The shots that he gets where he's open are because he knows what to run. And he's also capable of seeing the passes that I think a lot of people haven't seen from this team in a long time. So Michigan's been very pick and roll oriented, but when Beilein was at West Virginia, a lot of their attempts came off of cuts.
and just getting to the basket and getting open. Michigan hasn't really done a whole lot of that since they figured out that they didn't need to. But having that element to his game is good, and it's just, can he stay in front of everybody? At this point, I don't care. If you're shooting, what, 65% from three or something, you can be a stone-cold worst defensive player in the history of basketball, and you're still a plus. I think, you know, I would consider...
He's probably not going to continue to shoot 65%.
Well...
Who are you talking about shooting 65%? Duncan?
Duncan is...
Well, he's 61%.
61%.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Right.
But, and that's,
I apologize.
Well, no, that's okay, but that's...
It's a huge difference.
But that's with an outlier game, too.
With the
one
first
for
game...
1-for-6 game, you know, so beyond
where
that...
Where they were in Atlantis, yeah. So he's underwater for the first time. Right. I don't think that helped his shooting.
Right.
But you saw as soon as he ejected the fact that he was like...
Yeah, he's... But at Mo Wagner, I remember us talking about him before the season, and B-Line was like, you know... Hey, we just don't know. He's picking things up, but the language and the spin, they are not going to be able to hold this kid back.
Right.
And sure enough, he is on the court, and he is a difference maker with his play. He's a difference maker with his emotion.
Right.
I think he brings that element to this team, and they need it.
I mean, at times he looked like Frank Kaminsky.
No, he looks like Mitch. He's Mitch McGarry.
I think it's
except
Mario
he's like Kaminsky. A skinny German dude. Like he does the same thing where when he hedges on the screen, he looks for the opportunity to get the steal. Like if the big is on the perimeter and he's just kind of like assuming that he's going to be able to do it without pressure. He had that Mitch McGarry take from the elbow off the pick and roll.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's a dribble handoff on the pick and roll. I mean, he looks like Mitch. He doesn't rebound like Mitch because he's about, what, 50 pounds lighter than Mitch. But, you know, Camp Sanderson got to get some weight on that guy, and he's very, very skilled.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, the rebounding and defensive side of this.
Yeah, we're...
if they can improve there, because this team's going to score. No, people, I was catching flex. I thought you said they're gonna be a team that scored a lot of points. I think the condensed rotation is really going to help that. I think the health factor... with some of their guys is really going to help that. I don't know how much.
We're averaging 76 points a game.
They did a good job against NC State's pigs.
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
Doyle struggled with his hands, but other than that, he was good.
All right, folks, we got to get out of here. Don't forget, keep giving us calls for Magic of Christmas, 734-998-1050. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider Sports Talk.
Better than